Final matter of Russell versus City of Philadelphia.
May it please the court. My name is Matthew Weisberg. I represent the appellants.
Keep your voice up, please.
I'm sorry? Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll speak up louder. May it please the court, my name is Matthew Weisberg. I represent the appellants. I'd like to note a procedural matter, which is that in the below matter, Campbell, the co-plaintiff, had settled out and been dismissed. Just last week, Sadowski had settled out, and we will ask for his dismissal upon the receipt of the signed release. So we're here just on Russell, who's now the sole appellant in what we've limited to a Title VII retaliation claim.
Okay.
The district court below held that the EEO...
What did the district court do that was wrong?
What the district court did below that was wrong was refuse to review the record.
Did you tell him where to look?
Yes. And in fact, so did the appellee.
Can you show us in the submission to the district court, will you point to the district court's attention to the record? Other than the EEOC letter.
And beyond just saying it's in the depositions.
Right. Yes, Your Honor.
So there were several hundred or more pages of the record. You can't expect the court to look at that.
Well, in the first instance, I believe...
we're going to lose you on the
recording. In the first instance, and I will answer your question. In the first instance, I believe the court... even if a motion for summary judgment is not responded to, can deem, pursuant to local rule, statements of uncontested fact admitted, but cannot disregard the record.
Give me that again.
I believe, pursuant to local rule, the district court can, even if a motion for summary judgment is uncontested, or not responded for that matter, the district court must still make a record review, an independent analysis to whether or not summary judgment should be granted.
Without that motion for summary judgment telling the district court where in the record the deposition of the testimony of the evidence is there to support the motion?
Did you oppose the motion?
Yes, the motion was opposed.
Right, but you know, I mean, I was a district judge for 6 years, and when there was opposition to a motion for summary judgment, there was specific argument as to the facts in the depositions and the answers to interrogatories, in documents that indicate an issue of fact exists. And as you said in the beginning, let's give us some specifics on what you referred to.
In the statement of disputed facts on page 113 of the appendix, we have paragraph 2, F, asking Russell several times if she was married, and that cites D-548, which is not the EEOC opinion, asking Russell about whether she preferred being fixed.
D-548, that's her deposition or what?
Yes. That does cite to the EEOC charge.
And the EEOC charge is, you know, a complaint that's hearsay, so you had the evidence, but why wasn't it cited in the opposition to the motion for summary
judgment? It should have been, but notwithstanding that.
Well, you're a lawyer. I mean, it's up to you to know the rules of procedure to protect the interests of your client.
Correct. But I don't believe that the EEOC complaint itself can be disregarded.
Why can't it? What law for this purpose, anyhow?
Right.
What are you relying upon for saying that it should be disregarded when there's nothing in the record cited other than that?
We cite two opinions in page 19 of our brief, lower court opinions, District of Delaware and Eastern District of Pennsylvania, where the EEOC complaint itself was evidence of the protected activity that may form a basis for the retaliation claim.
Well, I'm not sure there's any dispute here about protected. Are you disputing protected activity? I don't think that's the issue. Go ahead.
Well, to the court's point, the circumstances underlying were a little bit, as you can see from the docket, unusual in that the motion for summary judgment was filed without a record. And then the response was filed without a record. And then the record was supplemented later. And we would argue it would be movement's burden to have produced that record at the time for us to respond to. This isn't to say that we didn't have the record. We had the record. But the record was not before the district court.
Rule 56 specifically requires plaintiffs to support their assertions that the fact is genuinely disputed by citing particular facts or materials.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And they did so?
And plaintiffs did not do so completely.
What do you mean? They didn't do so completely. They
didn't cite this certain, other than what I've mentioned, certain deposition testimonies and so forth. That said, the EEOC charge and the formal finding by the EEOC of cause was more than just a vague boilerplate. There was discrimination, there was retaliation. It was very detailed.
I don't follow what you're saying. You say that the plaintiff's assertions in their motion were not entirely verified by reference to the record or what?
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that the EEOC charge was not verified entirely, but with reference to the depositions.
Wasn't that?
Well, Your Honor, we would argue that there's an independent duty of the district court to review the record.
Scour the record. How many pages?
I have been a district court judge, and the district court judge does not pull out the depositions and go through them and say, well, let's see what the plaintiff's attorney missed. If there is information in the depositions that is relevant, you've got to point the judge to it.
Yeah, the judge is not the advocate.
No, I understood, Your Honor. One second, Your Honors. For example, Your Honor, in the move-in defendant's statement of undisputed facts, they point to a lot of the record. So I guess our argument would be
that was before the court.
They're before the court.
Well, in arguing against summary judgment, it is your burden as the non-moving party to point to facts of record which create material issues of fact And the way you do that is by pointing out the facts that the plaintiff has, not the plaintiff, that the movement has asserted, and say these are disputed issues of fact because of refer to such and such a page, refer to answers to interrogatories such and such a page. Did you do that?
No, Your Honor, but the moving, the facts are almost entirely uncontested in this case.
Well,
in fact, the argument on summary judgment was just a legal one. It wasn't, he said, she said, that there was no, for the retaliation claim, that there was no temporal proximity. That was the gravamen of the argument.
And you said there was temporal proximity?
Yes, but it's not a factual dispute. It's a legal determination. Yes, please, Your Honor, if I could have some time to look.
May it please the Court, Elise Brule on behalf of Appalese. I think from your conversation with Mr. Weisberg, bottom line here is that the only claim left is Plaintiff Russell's Title VII retaliation claim. It has three elements. Protected activity, we're not contesting that. Adverse employment.
Did you point the district court to where in the record the testimony was there that would raise a disputed fact? You've been before us before, you're a great lawyer. I'd be surprised if you pointed the court to those things to destroy your defense. Perhaps you did.
No, we didn't, Judge McKee. I mean, what we did was we pointed to, there were a number of claims. We pointed to the, at least with respect to this claim, that plaintiff had not met her burden to show a Title VII retaliation claim, primarily on the question of the causal link, causation. Ms. Russell was indeed dismissed. I mean, she did suffer an adverse employment action. She was denied benefits. If she can show that causal link, then she has retaliation. But she didn't do that at the district court. And respectfully, plaintiff doesn't do so now.
What was the time frame?
The time frame here is that she initially filed for benefits in September of 2008, September 4th, 2008. Then, at some point in time, let's do the dates that are set in the record. September 4th, 2008, she files for benefits. She files for two types of benefits. The one that's at issue here is called IOD, or heart and lung benefits, temporary disability benefits. She files that September 4th, 2008. She files her second EEOC complaint. It's February 23rd, 2009. At some point after that, it's not established in the record. The only place it's in the record is in her EEOC documents, which also reference a disciplinary hearing in March of 2009. At some point after that, Singleton testifies at some form of hearing that is an IOD hearing. Now, when that happens, it's probably not necessarily because these benefits, you know, it could be because she was dismissed on July. It's not in the record. That's correct. So that's number one. We don't have the timing here. It's not in the record. The second is that the EEOC determination letter makes two conclusions. The first is that Captain Singleton's testimony was false, and the second is that it made a difference in the hearing. First of all, at pages 671 to 673 of the record, she testifies, Ms. Russell testifies, that she did not report her injury until September, and she had her injury when she was detailed to another district. She was assigned to the 19th district. The injury occurred when she was assigned to the 16th District. So in terms of him saying, this wasn't reported to me, it wasn't reported to him until September 2nd. The idea that this, so it's not established, there's not a question of material fact that this is false. In fact, it's established that that's what she did. The second is that it made a difference. We don't have anything in this, we don't have anything in the record, respectfully, in the depositions or otherwise, that shows that McCaptain Singleton's testimony made a difference in terms of the denial of benefits to Ms. Russell. All we have is a statement in the determination letter. It's cited in the district court, it's cited again here, that it was reasonable to assume that it made a difference. An assumption isn't enough on summary judgment. There isn't a retaliation claim.
This is a very immediate,
yes.
Temporality.
Yeah, unless there's, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I can go through the summary judgment submission by plaintiff, but basically as to Captain Singleton, there's only two, so, you know, the bottom line here is there isn't a question of material fact for the Title VII retaliation claim. There wasn't one before the district court for all the reasons you've discussed with Mr. Weisberg. There isn't one now. And also in terms of plaintiff's submission, particularly vis-a-vis Captain Singleton, there are only two factual averments that are supported by the deposition. All the other ones are only in the EEOC complaint or EEOC determination. That's him asking Ms. Russell if she was married. That's in the deposition, and asking her if she were, quote-unquote, fixed, whatever that means. That's also a deposition, and that's it. Otherwise, the other sites to the deposition have to do with her time in the 23rd District, which is back in 2004, her time with Narcotic Strike Force, 2005 to 2007, basically all things that preceded her time with in the 19th District with Captain Singleton. They're just, and they don't pertain to the Title VII retaliation claim.
And the district court mentioned in her opinion those things.
Correct. So, I mean, if the court has other questions, I'll answer them. But really, what we have here is one claim that's not supported by the record before the district court. It's not supported now. If you have any more concerns, I can try to address them. We don't know, at least not from this record. It's the transcript. I noticed there was a statement in Ms. Russell's reply brief that the transcript was in the district court record. It's not. There were 30 exhibits in the district court record, and the heart and lung transcript is not one of them. Is there anything further? We ask you to affirm the district court.
If the panel finds that appellate's counsel did not police cite to the record in response to the motion for summary judgment, and the record itself as propounded by the motion for summary judgment does evidence factual facts that would tend to a motion for summary judgment as a matter of law, as Judge McKee said, we're done. But I don't disagree that the district court does not have to scour the record. I will say that this was, with the submission of the record, it was kind of strange, but I'm here for any questions by the panel.
Okay. Thank you very much, Matt. I will take the matter under advisement.